So good evening, everyone, and welcome. This is Trustee Dawn Danko as the Chair of Finance and Facilities on Thursday, May the 21st, 2020. We have just another minute to get started, and I'm hearing a few beeps coming in, so I'll just give it another 20 seconds. Okay, it is 5 o'clock, so we will get started, and I will remind everyone that we are being recorded and this will be available publicly. Also, a reminder of our virtual meeting norms. Please note that you are to have yourself on mute unless called upon to help with sound quality. We will do a roll call for attendance and for any questions. And just remember, when you're called upon for questions, if you don't have any questions, that's not a problem, but we do need to hear you say that so that we don't assume while you're on mute. I will randomly select a committee member to move any action items, which does not mean that you support the item, but it just moves it to get it on the floor. And to facilitate voting, we will do a negative vote. I will ask if anyone is opposed to an action item, and you only need to speak up if you're opposed. So I will start with the roll call, looking to committee members. Trustee Becky Buck.
I am here.
Welcome. Trustee Cam Galindo.
I am here as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Alex Johnstone.
Here.
And Trustee Paul Tutt.
Present.
Thank you, Paul, and welcome. We also have Trustee Maria Felix Miller joining us as a non-committee member. Do you want to confirm you're present?
I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other non-committee members who have joined us this evening? Okay, hearing none. For staff, I'll just check who's present. Associate Director Zucker.
Hello, everyone.
And you're a little bit challenging to hear, so hopefully we can fix that before you get a report. Senior Manager of Business, Denise Dawson.
Denise was having some challenges, so she should be on shortly.
Okay, thank you, and I can hear you better now. Senior Manager of Facilities, Dave Anderson.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. And Communications Officer Mark Taylor.
I'm here. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. And our minute taker, Gail McDonald.
I'm here.
Wonderful. Thank you. So we do have quorum and an additional member joining us this evening. I will call the meeting to order and look for approval of the agenda. Trustee Buck, you have the honor of moving the agenda. I'll just go through the roll call to see if there are any questions or concerns. Trustee Buck.
No question.
Thank you. Trustee Galindo.
No questions about the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Johnstone.
I'm good, thanks.
And Trustee Tutt.
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Miller.
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Is anyone opposed to approving the agenda? Okay, hearing no one, we will move on to item number 3, our interim financial report as of April 30th, 2020. Associate Director Zucker, will you start us off?
I can. So we're actually going to present these reports 3 and 4. So I know
Can I just interrupt? You're quite muffled. Can you try adjusting the phone?
Sure. Is that better?
Oh, that's better. Thank you.
Great. So Denise was going to present items 3 and 4, but she's having problems getting on and access to the internet to get her files. So I know we just approved the agenda, but can we move those down and do 5 and 6 first? Is that okay? Sorry.
I'm okay with that. I'll just allow trustees to unmute themselves. If anyone has an issue with adjusting our order for the agenda and starting with items 5 and 6, please speak up now as if you have an issue with it.
I don't have hi, it's Paul, sorry.
Thanks, Paul.
I don't have an issue. I don't have an issue with it, but I'm just wondering, do we need a motion for that at all?
Alex, do you want to help me with our parliamentary procedures?
Sorry. I'm not sure.
How about to be safe?
Safe, do it, yeah.
Can I'll have Trustee Tutt move a motion to adjust our agenda to move up items 5 and 6 and items 3 and 4 down.
Sorry, Don. We don't need an emotion for that. As long as we're all in agreement for the agenda, then no. We're just, I don't think... We don't actually need a motion for that to move the agenda around.
Okay. Well, thanks for clarifying that. So if there aren't any issues, then we will carry on and start with item number 5 and come back to items 3 and 4. Okay. So I will allow Associate Director Zucker to get us started on item number 5, our long-term facilities master plan update.
So thank you, and I will start, and then I will turn it over to Dave to go through. So as I sent an email about 4:35 with the two PowerPoint presentations. One of them is for this item, the long-term facilities master plan. So as trustees are opening it, I just want to thank Dave and his team. As trustees know, we went through this this long-term facilities master plan in great detail last year and made some adjustments to the formatting, which I think made it a lot easier to read. So we do annual updates to this as a monitoring item just to let everybody know. And then we do regular full updates to the report. So this is just a year where we're just doing a regular sort of annual maintenance to the document. But Dave will walk us through the document, and I think the best thing to do is to follow along with the PowerPoint presentation. It'll be high level, and then he'll be able to answer questions at the end, if that works.
Yes, thank you. Senior Manager Henderson.
Thanks very much. So through the chair, if everyone has the presentation open, the long-term facilities master plan presentation, I'll go ahead and get started on slide 2. So, as Stacey had indicated, we did make some changes. So the long-term facilities master plan is now a bit more of a fluid document. So for an example, when we make changes to any of our capital plans, those plans are embedded as links within the document. So if someone's clicking from an external party is clicking a link, they're live and current information. So we made that change last year, which has been well received. So the document itself is essentially just keeps us in line with our mandate to provide equitable, affordable, and sustainable learning facilities for our students and staff. And then it looks at the three categories as we break down each piece. So moving to the next slide, slide number 3, there's three primary sections within the document. Those three sections are aligned to the facilities department. So we've got planning and accommodations, we've got the capital projects division, and then the facilities operation division, which includes caretaking and maintenance. And then, as I indicated previously, we've got those embedded links to keep everything current and relevant as possible. So moving to the next slide, slide number 4, the planning and accommodation section is really where the long-term facilities master plan started off. And then as things progressed and we started to build some of the capital plans and maintenance plans, we incorporated those. But initially, it was focusing on the planning and accommodation pieces. And then it's broken down into 7 sections. So the first section being the community profile of Hamilton. So that's our live birth data, residential developments, and those sort of trends. Section 1.2 looks at the student yields, approximate student yields and historical data for particular areas. And then 1.3 is, of course, our property section that looks at properties that have been sold to date, any of our vacant lands, or anything going through disposition. The next slide, slide five, 1.4 is the planning areas. So that's the analysis of the elementary and secondary planning areas. And then it identifies the maps and trends and where the enrollment projections are heading for each specific area. 1.5 is the facility condition index. And this this particular area, it gets a lot of focus because this is where we talk about the general conditions of our facilities, and it's a tool that helps us plan and look at things such as our capital plan and make decisions there. I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. 1.6 is our facility partnerships, where we have access or surplus space in our schools, where we can look at introducing partners to utilize those spaces. And then the next slide, slide six, is 1.7. So the accommodation strategy schedule we looked at last month at finance and facilities, and then the schedule was approved at board on April 27th. So that's our schedule that in the past has been a great tool to look at our accommodation strategies for accommodation reviews, boundary reviews, et cetera. And as we know, no boundary reviews are proposed for the 2020-2021 school year. Next slide. So again, just coming back to the facility condition index. So this is generated annually, and typically we would receive the information or the data in February. We haven't received that data yet. We do have some projections, but the data itself is still the 2019 data, but we do have some projections in terms of where we've done capital work and where we expect to see some improvements. So essentially, the higher the number, the worse off the facility is. And then we have the four categories that are identified specifically to HWDSB as good, average, fair, or poor. And again, those are our specific categories, but the FCI data itself is a ministry-driven assessment. So the next slide, slide eight, again, this is last year's data, but I've just populated the poor category because that's tied to our strategic directions, and Associate Director Zucker is going to speak to that in our next report. But we do have the mandate to reduce the number of schools in the poor category by 25%. And given the information that we have now, we are on track to meet or exceed that target. And then the schools that we see in the right-hand side with the asterisks, we expect those schools to improve that number based on capital work that's been done. So once we receive the assessment data, when we receive the assessment data, we can bring back an update to this committee in terms of where we are for FCI for all of our facilities across the board. The next slide, slide nine, looks at the capital projects section. So again, this was a relatively new section that we included, and it incorporates all of our capital funding. We've identified all the capital funding that we've received since 2012, and that equates to just over $200 million that we've received from the ministry. It also contains links, as I indicated previously, to things like our facilities benchmark strategy for secondary or elementary, and those capital updates, the reports are also posted within those embedded links. Section three is our facility operations piece. So this outlines anything to do with maintenance, our maintenance plan, specifically our energy conservation demand management plan. Doesn't get into the caretaking piece specifically. It's more tied to, again, the FCI data and then the energy piece as well. So slide 11, I know I'm going quick and it's an awful lot of information to digest, but there's an awful lot here, and there's a 113-page document that speaks to all the information here as well. So the five-year maintenance plan was something that we had developed a couple years ago, and it looks
at all of our facilities to make sure that we have a plan for maintaining those grounds, doing some minor alterations, and again, the preventative maintenance piece, just to, in an effort to reduce some of those emergency repairs that we didn't have previously at the board. So we've seen some improvements, not to say that we're still not going to have the emergency elevator repair at the 11th hour, but we have seen some improvements in terms of the emergency calls and that sort of thing, or failures in our systems. Slide 12 is, again, just another look at the FCI condition level. So those are, again, specific to HWDSB. The values themselves, zero through, at last glance, CH Bray was our worst facility at 138%. So 100 being all the renewal pieces would equate to the same cost as building a new school. So, again, the higher the value, the worse off we are. So these pieces are taken right from the long-term facilities master plan. And, again, sort of one of the key components when we're looking at planning where we need to do work, what kind of work we need to do, and that sort of thing. Slide 13, again, this is some of the VFA. So VFA Canada is the company that does the facility condition assessments for our board as well as the 71 other boards in Ontario. We typically do in the range of 20 schools a year are assessed, and then those results are embedded into our plans to look at where we need to do work and what kind of work we need to do. So this isn't specifically tied to our backlog. So we often talk about our high and urgent backlog of $270 million. This is specific to work that needs to be replaced or maintained as identified by VFA. So we allocate just over $6 million on an annual basis to things like boiler replacements, roof repairs, even things like grounds for the kindergarten areas when they need to be repaired or maintained. So we look at, again, the 5 years, so we're on track. We do have a plan to complete the remaining 3 years and are on track to do so. And looking at the next slide, slide 14, our preventative maintenance plan. So again, this is something that is relatively new to the board. I think the analysis I used last year was changing the oil in your car and having a plan to do that every 6,000 kilometers or every 4 months. We now have a plan for different components within the board, whether it's elevators, pumps, et cetera. And then that maintenance, preventative maintenance, is typically done by our QP maintenance and head caretaking staff. And then where we need to, specialized certified third-party providers do help us with that as well. Slide 15, so this is annually, we allocate approximately $785,000 to preventative maintenance. And so these are the components that we look at right now in terms of what we need to maintain. We'd love to expand this, the list of assets. But again, just like everything else, our funding, we need to have a plan to address the preventative maintenance, the five-year maintenance plan, the capital plan, any emergencies and that sort of thing. So where we're at right now, we're comfortable, and we continue to look at different assets that we can add to that list in terms of preventative maintenance. Slide 16, so I won't go into this in any sort of detail, but this just talks about our funding. So there's three prime funding sources. So the school operating grant, that's the 3.5 annually that we typically look at. School condition index is one source of funding that we receive annually, and then the school renewal allocation is the other piece. So those are the three sources of funding that we utilize. And then on slide 17, the conservation and demand management plan. So just high level, we in 2014 set a target to reduce our energy use by 12%, and we did exceed that target by 4.22%, so that was great news. And then last year, we set a new annual energy goal to further reduce by another 7%, and as of right now, we are on track to exceed that target as well by the end of 2023. So great news and a testament to we've got a couple of dedicated staff specifically looking at our conservation and how we use energy across the system, and then bringing back some of the controls in our buildings centrally, so we have some control of how energy is being utilized. So great work there. And as we know, unfortunately, the costs continue to increase, but our utilization or our use is continuing to decrease. So good news that we're offsetting some of those costs. It'd be great if we would see some realization in terms of dollar, but they're sort of offsetting themselves right now. And then the last piece, I shared this slide 18, last year, and it's a bit of an interactive map. This data is still being updated currently, but this is last year's data, so there is a link there to the 2019-2020 utilization, and it's a bit of a sliding tool, and it shows basically every component for every school and the utilization for those pieces of information. It's kind of a neat tool, and you can see as you slide across, if a new school comes online, that another, its neighboring school is perhaps impacted and the utilization goes down. Kind of hard to describe over the phone, but I think last year when we had it in the boardroom, it was a little easier to look at. But again, I included that piece because I think it's an interesting tool. And it's a great tool to share with some folks if, you know, they want to look at what we're projecting in terms of enrollment and whatnot. So, again, I know that's an awful lot of information, but just wanted to go through that slide deck and just help us sort of guide the discussion. And then with that, I'm just happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. That was a very comprehensive report, and appreciate the slide deck to help us work our way through it. The interactive map, trustees will note there is a link right from your slide deck to take you to that map if you want to explore it later. So I will turn to trustees at this time for questions. This is not an action item, it's just an update, so we do not need a mover. And let's see, we'll start with Trustee Galindo this time.
Thank you, Trustee Danko. I appreciate it. I appreciate the report. I appreciate the update. I have a couple of comments. I don't know if I have any questions, but who knows? I think one might come up. The first one being with regards to the decrease in energy intensity consumption that we've had since 2014. You know, by the looks of it, we've surpassed the goal, and I'm very happy to hear that. And I think the methods by which we're doing that are becoming more evident as years go by, especially with new builds as well. When I go through, Sharon and Kustash Elementary School or the new Eastdale Elementary School, new builds that were just completed in the last year, there's motion sensing, light-saving lights throughout the school. So if there's no movement in the hallway, the lights will go out, or most of them will go out. And so it's throwing staff off a little bit when the lights come on suddenly when there's movement in the hallway. But, you know, I'm glad to see that we're making efforts there, and it's certainly important that we're doing our part when it comes to combating climate change. So I'm happy to see that. Of course, there's always more that we can do, but that's something that we'll continue to work on over the next little bit. Overall, though, you know, I'm glad to see that we've done our homework, and by we, I mean staff. I'm glad to see that a lot of effort's been put into our long-term facilities master plan. At the end of the day, though, you know, we're still seeing that we're behind on a lot of work that we need to do, not just with relieving accommodation pressures in certain areas, such as
East Glanbrook, Upper Stony Creek. We have Lower Stony Creek as well, Ancaster and parts of Flamborough that are seeing a lot of intensified growth, and, you know, schools are over capacity in those areas. Not only that, but also we have areas in other parts of the city, different properties that, you know, I'm hearing that it's probably just cheaper to rebuild. And I guess my frustration, I'm sure it's a frustration that my colleagues also share and staff at the board is, you know, we're reliant on money that comes from the province. And when we're ready to go, but we're not seeing that cash flow to the extent that we should, it's a bit frustrating. But, you know, the question that I always have at the back of my head is there anything more that we as trustees can be doing to make sure that we're seeing that cash flow from the province? Is there any more advocacy that we could be doing? And perhaps it's something that the chair could speak to, chair of the board, when it gets to her part. But it's just something at the back of my mind. But I appreciate the work that's gone into this so far, and thank you to staff for the update.
Thank you for your comments, Trustee Galindo. I can perhaps comment to some degree, and then I can turn to staff to see if they want to add to anything. One of the key things that we have done as a board over the past few years is work through accommodation reviews. And I'm not a fan of closing schools, but where we had schools that were older, in poor condition, and not at capacity, we were spending money to run those schools, and we're talking about operational dollars to run the schools, that we weren't recouping through our GSN and through the grants that we received for our facilities. So by reducing the number of facilities that were not at capacity, that were older in our inventory, I think that is one of the key steps we've taken to try to reduce our backlog for high and urgent needs and for our preventative maintenance and all of the things we should be doing with our facilities. If there's something more to be done, I'm sure trustees would be eager to hear, but I'll turn to staff to see if there's any further comments.
I can start it, Stacey, and then if Dave wants to add anything. So part of our strategic direction for school renewal is to maximize the funding opportunities that are available from the province. So as trustees know, and especially as a new trustee, it's hard to see this because there weren't any opportunities last year. And then we did submit our capital project submissions in September, and we have not yet had the results of those submissions. So in the past, the board has been very successful in all levels in doing the right things for the accommodation reviews and making sure that we have a capital plan. And really kudos to Dave and his team. If you go to look for long-term facility master plans on school board websites, you won't find very many. So not only is this a really comprehensive document, and it outlines our plan and is very transparent and allows us to be accountable for those dollars that we do receive, it's not necessary, but it is something that we take great pride in. So we do maximize those dollars, and I would say that we have been one of the boards that has received the most funding for new builds. That is a function of doing those pupil accommodation reviews and the hard work of the trustees and of the public. It's also the hard work of staff of making sure that we have a capital plan and following through on that plan, and then just doing everything that we can to strengthen our business cases so that when funding opportunities do become available, that we take advantage of them. So it's hard to say if we could be more successful because we haven't had that opportunity to see how successful we have been through this last round yet. But in the past, we have been very successful in our staff are very good at identifying the needs and being able to work with the ministry to push those business cases forward.
Thank you. Senior Manager Anderson, did you want to add anything?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I'll just recognize that when I started my last term, I don't believe we had a number of the current five-year plans with targets. I believe over the last term through Dave's leadership that we've developed some really important long-term planning with targets so that we are maximizing how we are spending our dollars and being very purposeful about that. And so I think that's putting us in a better position as well. Okay, I'll move along to our next person, Trustee Alex Johnstone.
Hi. I'm not sure. Some of my questions might not be quite appropriate for the long-term facilities master plan. So if it's not, then I will just defer them till later or work, individually with Dawn to get them addressed later. But I guess what I'm wondering is, so when I'm looking at the first one I was looking at, slide 11, where it's referring to safe schools. And so I'm wondering, how does our plan, does it adjust at all to kind of reflect the current pandemic? And so I'm thinking about things such as, reviewing ventilation, school ventilation systems, which I'm guessing would kind of go on slide 15, as part of all that kind of major work. Do we look at, I know we haven't had communication yet from the province, but if class size are going to be potentially getting smaller, does that mean we need more portables? Do we need to be looking at outside classrooms and investing in that and those types of workplaces? I know that a lot of that might be too soon because we haven't had communication from the province, but I guess what my question is that when we do have that communication, would we be looking to, introduce some of those elements into the long-term facilities master plan? I guess how would that kind of plan be reflected?
Thank you. And given this is a long-term planning document, the emerging urgent and surprising needs that we're encountering right now, of course, aren't currently reflected. But Senior Manager Anderson, if you could comment on when we do receive further communication, understand what requirements we'll need to be meeting going forward, where that would fit and how that would be reported, that would be great.
Thank you. And through the chair, I think, this is, as you indicated, this is our long-term facilities master plan. So I don't think it would find itself in this particular piece. We would take direction accordingly from the ministry in terms of whether it's air exchanges or number of students in the classroom or the school or gymnasiums, et cetera, what that looks like and what kind of air exchange they'd want to see. We would take that direction from the ministry and then bring an update back to this committee, I suspect. Unfortunately, when we look at air exchanges and that sort of thing, depending on the school, the older schools don't have the same, just like an older house, doesn't have the same ventilation and it's not as easily adjusted. And then there's, of course, ripple effects when you adjust the number of air exchanges. So there's a number of pieces that'll have to be studied. So again, we'll just wait for some direction from the ministry and then and go from there. But our staff are also on the committees that receive information and use all the different boards as a resource to study and look at how we should move forward and what we should be doing. So hopefully. By the end of June, we received some of that information in terms of what September potentially could look like.
Thank you. Trustee Johnstone?
Thanks. I think, and I'll take some of this because I'm being told that this isn't quite on topic. For matters such as the ventilation, which I do feel could potentially fall into some of the longer term, I guess it would be more immediate planning, but with that, I'll take some of those conversations offline, perhaps, just to get them further hashed out, because I think it's important for us. I'll just state that I think that it's very important for us to receive direction before acting. However, I also think it's very important for a school board to assess and know, I guess, kind of propose to the government as well what some of our needs are. So to treat it, to give them feedback, even if they're not asking for it. So I'll leave it at that, and I'll connect offline. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Johnstone. Trustee Tupp, do you have any questions?
No questions. I just echo some of the same sentiment and concerns that Chair Johnstone just raised. I think just along that line, having understanding what maybe our needs are and potentially putting them forward to the ministry might help with that overall exercise and allowing us to get ahead of the curve, so at least the ministry is aware of what our needs and challenges will be to address things in the fall. Thanks.
Thank you. Trustee Buck.
Thank you, Trustee Danko. I don't have, I kind of feel like I'm in the same boat as Trustee Johnstone was in, where I'm not sure exactly if this is the most appropriate place for my question. So if it's not, just let me know, and we can maybe cover it offline or when we go in camera. But I'm thinking of just before this new board was formed, just a year and a half ago, we had, prior to that, there was an accommodation review in the Centre Mount, and in the midst of all that happened, Queensdale, the result of that, Queensdale became a K to 8, and a lot of work needed to be done to bring the school up to a certain standard set out by the previous board. And my question, I guess, is, here we are quite a while later, and I know that this is in large part due to things not being approved by the ministry, so the ministerial level, but I've got to ask, we've got gyms and classrooms, and really the school is bursting at the seams, and they have a teeny tiny gym, and I'm quite concerned with the length of time that has already passed since they should have received their new gymnasium. Could someone comment on this and just let me know if this isn't the most appropriate place to go into the specifics of just one school?
Thank you, Trustee Buck. And certainly to talk further about the specifics of that example could be taken offline, but it does relate to the Long-Term Facilities Master Plan and the Capital Projects section. So I'll turn to staff maybe to talk about the status of gyms that we had planned to do, and we had a great plan for that, that has been in a holding position because the ministry has not approved them. Do we have any updates, or where would we look to see updates regarding those?
So it's Stacey, and thank you through the chair. Currently, as Trustee Danko indicated and Trustee Buck knows, we did not receive approval to use our proceeds of disposition for those that gym addition, and it is part of the benchmark work. So it is part of our capital plan. We will be working and are working with the ministry to try to see what our next steps are. And the first board meet, or the first finance and facilities meeting in June, is when we have a capital update report coming. And at that time, we would be hoping to have a little bit more information about at least what our next steps are. I don't necessarily, I wouldn't be able to assign a date to when work would be expected to happen, especially it did take over a year to get the approvals for the last time we put in an application. So I understand the frustration of the community and the frustration of trustees. Staff shares it. And we are working to see what we can do to get that moving forward as soon as possible, because it is part of our capital plan, and there is a timeline attached to that plan. So thank you.
Thank you. And I believe, an update went out to communities last year relating to the gym timelines because they didn't happen last summer. Has there been any communication to school communities to indicate there's still a continued delay?
Through the chair, no communication has happened so far, and I think we were just waiting to see what our next steps were, whether it's not going to happen, which I hope that's not the case, or what our next steps were so that we could give them some sort of idea of timing. So hopefully by our meeting in a couple of weeks, we will have that clarity and be able to provide a little bit more information. And then usually from our capital updates, which are quarterly, a lot of communication flow happens to individual communities if necessary.
Thank you. Trustee Buck?
Thank you, Trustee Danko. No, that really helps. Thank you. I'm really concerned that with everything else going on in the world, that was something that had kind of needed out of the necessity of the emergency situation we're in, kind of fallen by the wayside. So glad to know that it's still something everyone's thinking about, and I eagerly await our meeting in June where we can discuss it a bit further. Anyways, thank you very much.
Thank you. Trustee Miller?
Hi, thank you. And thank you to the staff who have who presented that report and the slides so well, because I'm not on this committee and it was very, very nice to have it broken down so clearly. I do have one question, and because I'm not on this committee, I apologize if it's been hashed out earlier or in a different place. But what I if I could just kind of bring our attention back to the FCI assessments, the good, average, fair, and poor schools as they're laid out in the report. I'm wondering, and again, I apologize if it's included in another report that I just don't have in front of me, but the schools that have been identified as poor, say the 65% and more schools, are those the top priority schools for, any kind of new money, any new repairs, maintenance, whatever the definition is? Is this a list that we're essentially working kind of bottom to up, bottom to top for? So if I could just get clarity on that.
Thank you, Trustee Miller. So as part of our benchmark plan, which is where we are updating science rooms and learning commons, we're getting gyms to benchmark size, the plan was for poor schools to receive funding first as long as they've been through an accommodation review, and we had committed to keeping them open long-term as part of our system-wide inventory.